following is paid programming and does not necessarily express views, opinions, and beliefs of 94.5 WGTK The Answer and our parent company, the Salem Media Group. The sponsor of this program is solely responsible for its content.
Coming to you across the ether at the speed of light, it's the Mortgage Moment with Mark Wells and Carrie Deese of Preferred Financial Services. Join us for the next hour. We're going to talk about FHA mortgage financing this morning. Carrie, FHA is what we often refer to as our go-to program for borrowers that either have a minimal credit profile or maybe a marginal credit profile. It typically offers the best overall payment structure for a borrower who has credit scores under 680. And with some qualifications, it's about the only program that will actually allow a borrower to qualify with a score under 620.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see advertisements that say USDA loans down to 520 or no minimum credit score on your VA loans. And while technically that is true, we typically don't see approvals in practice with those low scores.
Yeah. Anything advertising automatic approvals under 620, there are a lot of things that would have to fall in line for that to take place. We're going to talk about how if your score is under 620, but above a 580 with FHA, how you may be able to get an approval. Doesn't work every time, but it can. And that's part of why we're going to cover the FHA guidelines in our program today. Carrie, before we get started, anybody wanting to contact us with a question about FHA?
Always, you can call us Monday through Friday at 864-235-9596. You can email us at themortgagemoment@gmail.com. And you can catch this show on repeat on our website at preferredfinancialgreenville.com.
All right, so three ways and no excuses.
No excuses.
One way or the other, you can reach us. We're happy to answer your questions. So FHA, like all the other loans that we call government loans, Carrie, they're not really government-issued loans, are they?
No.
What function does the government perform or provide with what we call government loans?
The government insures the loans.
Okay, and when they insure a loan, that's not they going to insure the borrower if they die or if they get disabled, right?
Right. They insure the lender against default.
That's right, and it allows a borrower to enter into a mortgage transaction without putting 20% down.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that, you know, back in the 50s, and well, really prior to the mid-60s, if you were going to purchase a house, you had to put a 20% down payment. And that's because if a house is ever taken back in foreclosure and put on the open market, it won't usually bring more than about 80% of its actual market value in what is known as a distressed sale. So a while back, both government agencies and eventually private agencies decided to issue an insurance product that would protect the lender in the event of a default from having any loss in a foreclosure sale, and it allowed borrowers to begin to put less money down. So FHA is part of that. We call it a government loan, but it's really just the government insures the loan. I want to say, and this is a misconception, the government does not set the interest rate on an FHA loan. The interest rate is set by the free market, by the lenders that are out there, and again, the only function of government in the process is to provide the mortgage insurance, which we sometimes call PMI. And FHA has a twofold PMI structure. What are the two components, Carrie, involved in the PMI insurance on a FHA loan?
There's what's called the upfront mortgage insurance premium, or an FHA funding fee. They're
right.
One and the same, and that's financed into the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a monthly mortgage insurance premium, which you pay for the life of the loan.
That's exactly right. And again, we'll get into the life of the loan coverage with FHA. Other loan programs allow you to drop the PMI when you reach a 20% equity component. Unfortunately, FHA does not, and we'll discuss that a little later in the program. Advantages of FHA loans. Carrie, probably the number one advantage, what is it?
The low down payment. It's only 3.5% down.
That's right. And apart from a VA loan where veterans can finance 100% or USDA, this is the lowest down payment program that's out there. So oftentimes it's a go-to loan for a first-time home buyer because you just don't have to accumulate as much down payment to use the program. As we mentioned earlier, it has the lowest allowable credit score, and that is by the book, you could do an FHA loan down to a 580. However, in practice, that's not what we find. Carrie, in order to get an approval under a 620 score, you have to have approval through FHA's automated underwriting service. And that being the case, all of the ones we've run over these years, what would you say about the lowest score we've seen get approved?
Typically about 595. And I do want to rewind a little bit. Much like you will have seen advertisements for the VA or USDA loans with no minimum credit score, technically there isn't really a minimum credit score for FHA, and some lenders will allow a lower credit score, but all the stars have to align. And again, in practice, 595 is typically what we see.
And we see a pretty good cross-section of America here. I would say that if loans were being done much under 595, we would have seen them by now.
Right.
One of the advantages with the FHA automated underwriting system, quite frankly, is when I run it for a borrower, if it gets a turndown, I can play with the parameters of the loan. I can act like the borrower has more reserves. I can act like the borrower, you know, has more down payment they could make.
Mm-hmm.
And to see if it strengthens it. But usually there's a point at which FHA just says there's not enough strength here to do this loan, and it doesn't seem to matter what you add to it. It doesn't come back with an approval.
Right.
So to get an approval under a 620, you do have to have the automated approval. We run that at the get-go of an FHA loan just to see if we're going to have any problems come up with the loans. Now, FHA, other than VA, is the most forgiving of past credit disruptions. Credit disruptions are things like bankruptcy filings, foreclosures, short sales, things like that. Carrie, if someone has filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and just for our listeners out there, Chapter 7 is where you literally walk away from your debts. There is no structured repayment of your debts. You simply file. You don't have the capacity to pay your debts off, and you walk away from it. If you filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, when will FHA then allow you to purchase a home?
It is 3 years from the bankruptcy discharge date.
I'm glad you said that. A lot of people assume that's from the filing date.
Right.
There's usually about a 6 to 8 month period from the day you file your bankruptcy to the day it's discharged. So FHA goes by the discharge date. And now, in a truly odd situation that you wouldn't think you would be able to get a loan in, but in a Chapter 13, if you have entered into Chapter 13, and that is a structured repayment of debt, it's different from Chapter 7, you're not walking away, but you're going to pay your creditors less than what they are owed. What is the rule regarding a Chapter 13 bankruptcy for FHA, Carrie?
Surprisingly, they will allow you to get a mortgage while in you're in a while you're in a Chapter 13 bankruptcy with court permission, and you have to have a 1 year record of perfect payments to the mortgage company.
So, and I've done these before. We've gotten these done. A Chapter 13 bankruptcy usually is paid out over about 5 years. But you can still be under the Chapter 13 bankruptcy and qualify to buy a home with the court's permission using FHA financing if you've made 12 payments and those 12 payments have been on time to the bankruptcy court. How about a foreclosure event, Carrie? How long before you're eligible to use FHA?
That is actually also a 3 year wait.
Okay, and then short sales. And let's explain what a short sale is. A short sale for our listeners is a transaction in which you have sold a house where you owed more money than the house was worth, and you had a deficit that you couldn't make up when you sold the house. A short sale has to be done with the permission of the existing mortgage company, but a short sale basically does not pay your old loan off in full. What is FHA's rule regarding short sales?
If the loan was in default at the time of the short sale, there is a 3 year wait, just like a foreclosure.
So just like a foreclosure.
Right.
But what if the borrower was current on their mortgage, they kept paying it, and hey, it's just the market. The house declined in value.
There is no wait period as long as it was current for the 12 months prior.
And that is unique with FHA. We'll come back and talk about some more of the advantages to FHA loans after the break. Then, of course, we got to give you the flip side of that coin and some of the disadvantages, but they're actually very few. Join us on the other side.
for joining us this morning. We are talking about FHA loans, which is one of our most versatile products. As always, if you have questions, give us a call Monday through Friday at 864-235-9596.
Thanks, Carrie. We were going over the advantages of FHA loans, and I've actually got 15 advantages listed here. That's a lot. Comprehensive list. It really is. We were saying how very unique among FHA, if you are in an undischarged Chapter 13 bankruptcy, you can still use an FHA loan to purchase the home while you're in the Chapter 13 bankruptcy. Also mentioned that as far as a short sale goes, that if your loan was current at the time of your short sale, you do not have to wait 3 years to buy a home like you do with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So very unique. FHA can solve some credit issues that a borrower may have had or some event-related credit disruptions that would otherwise keep you out of the housing market for a good bit longer. Some other advantages to FHA that are shared with other programs but are also part of FHA is that FHA allows for the down payment to come from a gift as long as the automated system approves the loan that way. And Carrie, the automated approval system will rate the risk of a loan with gifted down payment a little higher.
That's right.
So we don't always get an approval, especially if we're under a 620 score. We tend to not get approvals if the down payment is gifted. But we're going to talk to you about a way you can finesse that rule and use that rule to your benefit to go ahead and buy with FHA using what were gifted funds. We'll talk about that a little later in the program, so hang in there. FHA allows the seller to pay all closing costs and prepaids. So technically, you can do an FHA loan with just the 3.5% out of pocket if you negotiate for the seller to pay your closing costs and prepaid items. So very little money out of pocket. We do find that FHA PMI premiums are generally lower compared to conventional PMI premiums for borrowers who have scores under 680. So a lot of times, even if the borrower might be qualified to use a conventional product, we'll still keep them with FHA because the overall payment structure can be much lower. Now, FHA also allows for a non-occupant co-borrower, or what it typically has been called a co-signer, and that can be a big advantage. The co-signer cannot cure a credit score that's not within guidelines, meaning if the borrower doesn't have the minimal threshold credit score, it doesn't matter how strong the non-occupant co-borrower is. However, it can strengthen a credit weak loan and make a difference in a loan approval. And then when we're talking about FHA loans, we're not only talking about what we've been, and that's the purchase loan, which is called the 203B program, but FHA also provides a program called a 203K, which we're going to go into detail, which allows for non-structural renovations to be financed after you've purchased a home. And the final FHA product that also is unique to FHA is the HECM, or what does that stand for, Carrie?
Home Equity Conversion Mortgage.
Yeah, and that's all fancy for what we really call it, which is
a reverse mortgage.
FHA is the only source of reverse mortgages that there is. And again, the government's function there is not to make the reverse mortgage loan. They simply insure the reverse mortgage loan. Last advantage of an FHA loan is it can offer a higher amount of cash out as far as a percentage of the loan, a higher cash out allowance than a conventional program does. Now, we have to be fair when we're talking about advantages. We also have to talk about disadvantages. And here's where, as a broker, we kind of come into play to help you with decisions. There are always give and take in all these loan programs. And what we try to do for you is distill out the information for your specific transaction and then guide you whether you should go towards a conventional program or towards an FHA program. So you need to weigh both the advantages and the disadvantages. Carrie, if we had to say the single biggest disadvantage on an FHA loan, what would it be?
It's that monthly mortgage insurance premium is for the life of the loan, and it doesn't fall off.
That's right. That was not always the case. I think it was 2012 or 13 that somebody in the government all of a sudden discovered, hey, all these people are not having to pay monthly PMI after their loan balance drops to 80% or under, and we're losing a bunch of revenue that way. Totally forgot about what the purpose of the PMI was, which was loan insurance, and you don't need it after that.
Mm-hmm.
But they just decided it was a source of revenue, and they made it life of loan with the stroke of a pen. Now, there's one exception to that, and yet that is if you put 10% down on an FHA loan, then you can drop PMI after 10 years, but that's still a lot of PMI.
Right.
What we find, a borrower who starts with a conventional loan with a regular monthly PMI payment, by the time they have paid the loan down for 5 years, and by the time the house has appreciated a little bit over those 5 years, you reach a point at which you can drop PMI. But with FHA, even minimally, you're going to be 5 years past that point, and that's 5 years of PMI premium payments that you have to make. So sometimes FHA is not the way to go if you can go conventionally, for that reason alone, that you cannot drop the PMI if you start off with a 3.5% down FHA loan. What other disadvantages do we have, Carrie?
Well, you have to use the same appraisal for 6 months. So yeah. If you get a bad appraisal, of course, we can go back and we can try to dispute the value. But whatever they decide on, you're stuck with it for 6 months. Can't get another appraisal.
That's exactly right. And that is an exclusion that actually can cloud a seller, too. If a borrower is using FHA financing to buy their home and the appraisal comes in under the purchase price, and the seller walks away and says, no, I'm going to sell it to you. Well, unfortunately, that appraisal stands out there for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And if another borrower comes and says, hey, I want to buy your house, I'm going to use FHA, they're still going to be stuck with that appraisal.
Right.
So that's kind of a big disadvantage, especially because as a broker and as a lender, any lender, bank, no one controls the appraisal process any longer. It's just kind of a shot in the dark if you're going to get a good one. Last disadvantage of an FHA loan is that for a borrower who has higher than a 680 score, FHA can sometimes result in a higher overall payment structure. Now, there may be some other reasons to use FHA. Maybe your scores are over 680, but you had a Chapter 7 bankruptcy 3 years ago. Fannie and Freddie are not going to let you buy a house with less than 20% down for 7 years. So you may have to go with FHA, even though the payment structure is a little bit higher. It gets you in the house. Maybe you can't drop PMI, but hey, this is just a stepping stone to recovery. So despite these disadvantages, FHA still remains very much a go-to program. We want to talk specifically about the 203B program. That is the kind of the standard purchase and FHA refinance program. For purchases, as we've mentioned, it allows the borrower to make a 3.5% down payment, minimal down payment. It also has the advantage that if you are using FHA to refinance your home, you can also go to that same 96.5% loan-to-value, whereas conventional loans are going to stop out at 95%. And that's for what we call rate and term refinances. Carrie, what's a rate and term refi?
That means you're not taking any cash out. You're just trying to update either the rate or the term of your mortgage.
That's right. No cash back. For cash out refinances, FHA 203B is exceptionally good because it offers, other than VA, the highest amount of cash out loan that you can do. It will go to 85% of the value of the home. Again, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac conventional loans cap out at 80%. So sometimes FHA solves a problem where a borrower needs to get a little bit more cash out, and conventional is going to stop them off at 80%. They need the 85% to restructure their finances. So sometimes it works where something else doesn't work. Carrie, let's mention the structure of an FHA loan. If you are going to get an FHA loan, how is that loan going to be structured beyond just the 3.5% down payment?
There is a 1.75% funding fee that gets financed into your loan.
Okay, and let's put that in perspective. If you're buying a $100,000 house, your FHA funding fee is $1,750. So instead of borrowing based off $100,000, you're going to be borrowing based off $101,750. You'll have a slightly higher loan amount because they will have financed the funding fee into the loan.
Right. There is a 0.85 monthly mortgage insurance factor.
Okay, and to put that in comparison, conventional for a 95% loan starts usually at a 0.96 and can go up to a 1.46 if your scores are low enough. So a PMI factor of 0.85 is actually pretty good. It means on a $100,000 loan, you'll have about a $71 a month PMI premium.
Now, that's actually not impacted by your credit scores like it would be on the conventional
program. That's right. FHA still has a one-size-fits-all. So no matter what your score is, your FHA PMI premium is going to be the same across the board. Carrie, can you do lender-paid mortgage insurance with FHA?
Unfortunately not. That would be a really, really nice product
if
they did.
Yeah, I keep waiting for them to come up with that. A lender-paid mortgage insurance is a limited default insurance premium, and it's paid for by an upfront adjustment to the rate.
Mm-hmm.
Again, results in a much better payment structure on conventional loans, but unfortunately is not available for FHA. And, Carrie, what if we have a non-arm's length transaction? A non-arm's length transaction would be where a parent may want to sell their home to a child or an uncle to a nephew, or it can occur when an heir wants to buy a home out of an estate. What are FHA rules regarding non-arm's length transactions?
This is actually one of the more frustrating parts of it, I think. They do limit you to 85% financing just based on the value of the property.
That's right. Now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will do fully 95% on those transactions. FHA, for whatever reason, where they're much more lenient in most every other category, this is one where they just get a little bit squirrely. They will only finance 85% of the value if your seller is related to you. In fact, on an FHA loan, you have a form you sign in which you have to state whether you're related in any way to the seller, because that they limit that transaction to 85%.
And, of course, they can't just call that form, you know, a conflict of interest form.
Right.
It's an identity of interest form.
Identity of interest, yes. Do you have an identity of interest? Well, who knows? Here, just sign and go away. Yeah, the government has a way of renaming everything to make it complicated when it's pretty simple. FHA does allow for gifted funds to be used for down payment. And we've mentioned that to use them, because the automated underwriting system rates that loan as a higher risk, we can only allow for gifted down payment funds where the automated system allows it to do. And generally speaking, if your scores are over 620, you'll probably get an approval.
Mm-hmm.
If you're under 620, it can depend on some other factors. Sometimes we are allowed gifts and sometimes we're not. One of the rules as far as gifted funds go, we'll get back to when we get off the break. It frustrates the giver of the gift, but it's required in the FHA financing process. See you after the break. Okay, Carrie, I just did a quick calculation. I said at the beginning of the program we were coming to you at the speed of light, and it's been 30 minutes, and so far our message has gone out 334,800,000 miles.
Wow.
Out into space. So if there are any space aliens out there who need an FHA loan, they've gotten the message. They're coming to Earth. They're buying our homes. Watch out. 334 million miles in 30 minutes. That's amazing. Our message is amazing. Now, I guess I should have calculated how far out there our first program is now, out in space.
Oh, my.
Yeah, we may have reached another galaxy by now. We could have a full invasion on our hands. Everybody trying to come to see Preferred Financial to get an FHA loan.
Of course, if they heard our first show, they might be running away instead of coming towards us.
That may be alien prevention. We have gotten better at this, haven't we?
A little bit.
All right, so for all you aliens out there, let's talk a little bit more about FHA. We mentioned that it allows for gifted funds. Now, there is a way in which you can use the rules to your advantage. You're not breaking the rules to do this. But if you get an automated underwriting response that says you're not eligible to use gifted funds for down payment, what you can do is have the giver of the gift go ahead and send those funds to you. You can put those funds in your bank account. And 61 days later, you can apply for an FHA loan. Why the 61 days, Carrie?
Well, because after 60 days, it's not considered a gift anymore, and we don't even need to see documentation older than that. Yep.
So that is the ultimate cure. And sometimes we run into this, and it's a little bit frustrating. You don't want to go under contract not knowing whether you can use gifted funds or not. We can tell you from the very beginning when you call us to pre-qualify, hey, you cannot use gifted funds, but hey, here's how you can get the funds to where they become your own saved funds. You put them in the bank, you wait 61 days, and then you go house shopping. So if you are eligible to use gifted funds, though, there is a process that I find is probably more frustrating to the giver of the gift than it is to the receiver. So that adage that it's more blessed to give than receive, they don't feel that way when they do an FHA loan, because there is a process by which we must show that the giver of the gift had the ability to give the gift.
Right.
And boy, that makes people mad. What do you mean I have the ability to give or don't have the ability? What does that matter? Well, it matters because a giver of a gift might have some strings attached in which they have gone out and borrowed money instead of giving it. They borrowed it and they created for the person they're giving the funds to what is known as a contingent liability.
Right.
That means in some way that their child is obligated to pay back the loan that the parent used as a so-called gift. So it makes sense, still makes people mad. So, Carrie, step people through the process by which gifted funds have to be traced to be used.
So, and I'm going to put a heartfelt plea out to everyone listening. Please, please, please don't ever use cash for anything.
That's right.
Because we can't verify
cash.
You
can't trace cash.
Yeah. So don't take it out of your safe and give it to your children to use the transaction. Don't take it out from under your mattress to use for your own transaction. Just don't do anything with cash, period.
It's like the gift. It put it in the bank and wait 60 days.
Right.
Then it is not traced and it's yours, but don't at the last minute try to use cash.
Because unfortunately, you know, lining the cash up on the copy machine and doing a color scan of it is not sufficient documentation.
You know, I did that on a loan like back in 1992, I think. We actually, I remember copying $100 bills on a copier to say, yeah, they had cash. But that's just a
no. Not anymore, no. And you can't make a copy of your debit card either to say it's coming from your check. It just doesn't, yeah, no.
Okay.
Anyway, back to what we were talking about.
How do we go about proving
so
gift funds?
The gift donor either needs to write a check, purchase a cashier's check with the funds already in their bank account, or send you a wire with the funds needed. We will then have to document the funds going into your account and an updated account history. We will also have to document the gift donor's bank account for the last month and the amount going into your account. So the full paper trail.
Okay. And I will say this, and remember this, that no one who has a vested financial interest in your transaction can give you the money. And what that means is your seller cannot give you down payment, and neither can your realtor, and neither can your mortgage broker.
Right.
Only gifts can only come from a relative. Now, FHA actually defines a relative. I think some other programs, we've got a little more leeway to godparents and things like that. FHA actually defines a relative out to a first cousin. I never have figured out how you prove a first cousin relationship.
Right. And that I've never been asked to prove a relationship either.
Anyway, that's what they say. Now, when we get to some other little quirks in FHA, the appraisal, as with all appraisals, have to be ordered through what is known as an appraisal management company, or we have shortened that to AMC, appraisal management company. That has produced, the AMC system has produced a lot of difficulties, I would say, for all originators, Carrie, because it's removed from the originator the ability to choose the appraiser.
Right.
And that was to avoid collusion, which is our favorite word these days. You know, we're not colluding with the Russians or anything, but we might collude with the appraiser to say, hey, bring this value in where we need it.
And we know that was happening.
It was. And so they eliminated that by separating any mortgage originator, whether that's a bank, a mortgage bank, or a broker, from the choice of who does the appraisal. So the only reason it's not ideal is this. We occasionally get a bad appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
And although we have appeals processes, I think my last count was, 128 appealed appraisals and two that got a value changed.
Yep. And those two were just in the last 2 years.
Yeah, really. I mean, for years and years, we had a zero record going. And it's not from lack of trying. We provide multiple comps. In some cases, we even provided second appraisals.
Oh, yeah.
And they wouldn't even accept it. So it's a very non-responsive system. As we mentioned, if you start off with an FHA appraisal and it doesn't come in where you expected it to, you're locked out of any alternative appraisal. Even if you tried to change lenders, that appraisal has an assigned FHA case number that is associated with your address in the FHA system. And if you try to go elsewhere, they will flag it and say, no, there is an existing appraisal. Have to use it. Now, in order to do a 203B regular purchase loan or regular refinance loan, the home must be in livable condition, and it must not have any functional obsolescence. That's another big word, Carrie. What do we mean? That's two words. What do we mean by functional obsolescence?
Everything has to be in working order.
Yeah, basically you can assume that, working order condition. And that includes your plumbing, your heating, your electrical. An FHA appraisal is not a home inspection. However, they will turn on your hot water faucet to make sure the hot water's coming through.
Right.
They'll turn on your thermostat to make sure your heat comes on. And they'll check the systems to make sure they're in working order, and they must be. The 203B program, again, is the one available for purchasing a home and is the one available for refinancing a home. Now, we're going to turn and talk about the 203K program. That is FHA's purchase rehab program, and it, again, is fairly unique in the industry. Fannie Mae has floated a program of their own called, it's not Home Ready. What do they call that
Home
one?
Possible.
Home Possible. Is that it? Or is that Freddie Max?
Everything is home something. Yes, I can never remember which one is which.
So the FHA 203K.
Home Path. That's it.
Is it Home Path?
Home Path.
Okay. Are you sure?
No.
No. I'm not either. Who knows? We'll look it up. Look it up in your funkin' wagon. So for purchase and rehabilitation where there are no structural issues with the home, the FHA 203K program is very unique. It can allow you to buy a home, and not only will finance 96.5% of that transaction, but based on a future value, will also fund 96.5% of your renovations. Again, we have to stress these are where no structural work is being done or has to be done to the home. You cannot tear out a wall. You can't add a room, but you can do all of the cosmetic repairs that need to be done. You can replace and upgrade all the systems in the home, including electrical, heating and air, plumbing, hot water heater. And FHA loves this. They will fund above all of these things. If you want to put in what are known as energy efficiency upgrades, they will finance those even above the value of the home. So, if you have high-rated appliances, sometimes they can qualify for energy efficiency upgrades. A higher SEER rating on your heating and air can do it. Solar, that's another option that FHA will finance above the value of the home in some circumstances. So energy efficiency upgrades can be done. Just remember that when we talk about cosmetic improvements, we're talking about things like painting and flooring, maybe resurfacing or refacing cabinets, replacing vanities, replacing tubs and things. You just can't do any structural work. If it comes to removing a wall or adding a wall, simply cannot do it. The FHA 203K program will also allow for some work to be performed by the owner if it's not a skilled trade item. We'll talk about that and the rest of the 203K advantages when we get back off the break. So join us for our last segment. Stretch at warp factor 3, Mr. Sulu. I think that means we exceeded the speed of light, which I didn't think you could do, but, you know, if you're Star Trek, you can, I guess. We're still out there at the speed of light, coming to you. Through the ether. Now, one day we'll have to discuss the ether, because that's a really interesting concept. Well, right now we're talking about FHA 203K, and Carrie, during a break, was saying she's got a little system for remembering which of these FHA loans is which, because honestly, I remember them because I've got the numbers in front of me. What's a good way to remember what we're talking about?
Well, the 203B program, I think of the B as buying or basic.
Basic
program. That's your basic program.
That's your basic FHA.
The 203K, now why these things are all 203.
I don't know who came up with these things.
But the 203K, I think of the K as like kitchen, if you're going to redo your kitchen. There's also a 203H, which is for disaster. If you've been through a natural disaster, which luckily we don't see much here, but the H is like hurricane.
Yeah, we've seen some 203H loans down on the coast because we do some stuff down there. And it is. I've forgotten about it. I didn't even put it on the list here of what FHA does, but that's good to remember. So we'll have a test at the end, and now you'll be able to pass it. All right, so the 203K allows for non-structural renovations and repairs and energy efficiency upgrades to be done to a home that you are buying. It will finance both the purchase price and the improvements at its 96.5% of value level. I did mention before the break that the 203K will actually allow for some work to be performed by the owner, and sometimes owners get into this. Now, it will not let you do work which requires a licensed contractor. So you could switch out a faucet yourself, but if you're redoing plumbing lines and you're going to have to get it permitted to do things like that, then you're going to have to get a licensed contractor to do it. What we have found sometimes, depending on the extent of the renovations that you plan to do, sometimes it's really much easier just to hire a general contractor who can put together all the subcontractors for you, and that way you don't have to break your cost down into quotes on every single item. It can save you a lot of work. And sometimes it's good to have a general contractor to oversee the work of skilled tradesmen to make sure that everything is done right and completed and on time. So the FHA 203K requires you to get estimates for repairs. That's part of the process. And it also slows the process down a little bit, because once you have put a contract on a house and we begin the loan process, you've got to get some subcontractors in there to get prices for these things. We tell you that you probably should not count on less than 6 weeks, but probably should count on more like 8 weeks to pull off an FHA 203K, just because of some of the processes.
Yeah, there's a lot of waiting involved, waiting to hear back from the contractor on specific items, waiting for certain inspections. So always better just to plan for longer than you think it's going to take.
And let me clarify that the 203K program lets you close on the house in its current condition.
Right.
And then releases the funds as the work is completed for the work you're doing. So the time we're talking about is not time to get work done. This is just time to get estimates for getting the work done.
Right.
And I tell you, it's a crowded field out there. I've been trying to get some estimates on some properties of mine, and everyone is busy out there. So if you're going to look at a rehab program with FHA, give yourselves about 8 weeks just in case it takes that long. Now, there's some additional costs associated with the 203K loan just because it is more extensive and more complicated. What are those cost differentials, Carrie, that our borrowers need to be aware of?
There are some higher lender admin fees.
Yeah, and sometimes it's called underwriting fees, but most 203K loans, because there's a lot more involved. The underwriter not only has to approve the loan, but also has to approve and review all of the improvement estimates. They charge a higher administrative or underwriting fee for those loans. What else?
There's also some draw inspection fees.
That's right. Anytime you are going to draw out money to pay for work that is finished, they have to send an inspector out. Usually the original appraiser is the inspector, but each draw requires an inspection, and that's usually $150 per trip inspection fee.
And then there's the final inspection fee once everything is done.
That's right. So if we were going to say, Carrie, all right, you're choosing a 203K project rather than just a 203B where you're going to buy the house, how much more is that loan going to cost them start to finish, you think?
Usually about $1,500,
$1,600. Okay. And then, again, this has to be paid by the seller, paid by the buyer, but someone's got to pay the cost. So just be aware, you may be getting a really good deal, and you usually do, on a home that needs to be rehabbed. And so I just say to people, okay, the $1,500, $1,600, just consider that part of the renovation cost,
right?
Because it really is, and you're still getting a good deal. So just a little more expensive to administer. Now, we want to talk about the last of the FHA programs, which is the reverse mortgage product that we mentioned earlier, and we talked about this on the show, but I'm going to cover it again. There's a lot of misconceptions about reverse mortgages. And I think the easiest way to understand how can I get a mortgage and never have to make a mortgage payment, because that sounds a little bit like magic, is just for you to realize that a reverse mortgage is structured on an actuarial basis. And actuarial means that there are statistics out there, and even though you don't know when you're going to die, the statisticians know when you're going to die. That's kind of interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to die at 79.7. Well, you're not going to, but you may die at 99.7. Somebody else died at 69.7, and right there in the middle is the statistical average. So based on statistics, based on your actuarial death age, what a reverse mortgage does is provide you funds to either pay off your existing mortgage or even to buy the house. And not many people know you can use a reverse mortgage to purchase a home. It provides funds in which, because you're not going to make any monthly payments, it takes the interest that will accrue each month on that loan and it adds it to the balance. So let's say you start off with a $100,000 reverse mortgage at a 5% rate. What that means is that at the end of a year, instead of owing $100,000 on your mortgage, you now owe $105,000. It's the $100,000 you started with plus the interest that accrued during that first year. So your mortgage balance grows. You might say, well, golly, what's going to happen? I'm going to get out there and owe more than the house is worth. Well, no, because they're based on your actuarial age, they know when you're going to die. And they have already calculated what the interest will be that has accumulated in your lifetime. And they have made an allowance for the fact that the home will also grow in value. Now, that's a little bit of a guess. There are statistics for those things, too, but they're not as precise as death statistics. So, but there is a factor in there that says your house is going to increase in value. You're going to live to X date. And when that happens, there will still be equity in your home. And that's why the reverse mortgage can work. It can work marvelously. I've seen this solve insoluble problems. And that is because a reverse mortgage program, number one, has no credit qualifying. You do not have to credit qualify for a reverse mortgage. Why, Carrie?
Well, because they're not expecting you to actually send them any money.
Not a house payment. That's right. If you don't have like a house payment, what's the credit risk? There is no credit risk.
Now, because it is an FHA program, we do still have to explain any credit disruptions in your history, but it will not prevent
it
you from getting a loan.
You. That's right. And it's the only program that, you know, again, right out of a Chapter 7, you could engage a reverse mortgage on your home if you needed to. And there simply are no credit qualifying to them. There's no income qualifying other than to determine whether you're capable of paying your property taxes and property insurance. So, yes, we get income information, but they are not running debt ratios like you have to qualify with a regular program, again, because there is no house payment and it doesn't threaten your debt structure. Just realize that if you take out a reverse mortgage, that your loan balance is going to go up with time. And although from a statistical standpoint, you should still have equity when you die, you probably don't want to use a reverse mortgage product if your intent is to leave your heirs with equity in the house, because it potentially could be exhausted. We wouldn't expect that to happen, but it can happen. And Carrie, let's take the extreme. I read the Guinness Book of World Records over the weekend. It said the oldest person on the face of the earth right now, I think, is 114 years old. So if you live to be 114 and you owed $300,000 in your reverse mortgage and your house is worth $200,000, what's going to happen to your heirs? Are they going to have to pay that $100,000 difference?
No, they actually won't.
And that is the huge protection. That is the reason FHA is involved in the reverse mortgage process, because what it does is it says to the reverse mortgage lender, if this guy lives to be 114 and he owes $100,000 more or whatever more than his house is worth, you, the lender, are not going to lose a penny because we are going to insure your loss. So part of the cost of your reverse mortgage is, again, an FHA funding fee. However, in the case of a reverse mortgage, it is significantly higher than the 1.75% that it would be on a regular mortgage. This is a completely different type of product, but that FHA funding fee is subtracted from your proceeds before your mortgage is paid off or before you can access money from your reverse mortgage. And that provides the insurance to the lender, which ultimately insures your heirs, that your estate cannot accrue a deficit from the sale of your home after you die. Carrie, if an heir wants to buy the home themselves out of the estate, even if it's upside down, can they do that?
Absolutely.
That is a great change. They used to not be able to back before FHA took over the program. But now no one is barred from purchasing the program at its fair market value, regardless of whether more is owed on the property or not. So this does not leave your heirs without an option of buying the home, and they're not going to be forced to pay more for the home than it's worth. They can buy it out of the estate if you want to. I want to give listeners just a general parameter of how much you might expect to get in a reverse mortgage, and it varies according to your age. The older you get, the more you get, because statistically you're not going to live as long, and so they will lend you more in the beginning because your balance is not going to go as high as someone who is younger. So in general speaking, at age 63, which is the first age at which you're eligible for a reverse mortgage, you'll be able to get about 40% of what your home is worth. If you have a $200,000 home, you're going to be able to borrow about $80,000 on a reverse mortgage. Up at age 75, that figure goes more to 48%, almost to 50%. So you're going to be able to borrow $96,000 to $100,000 on a reverse mortgage of a $200,000 house. Now, this can be important to someone who's contemplating retiring, who hasn't been able to quite pay off their home. A reverse mortgage may be able to retire that mortgage that you have a payment on, send you into retirement, and for the rest of your life, you can live in the home you love, keep the family home, and never have a mortgage payment. It's a great product. Call us if we can give you any more information.
And just a quick reminder, you don't have to depart title when you do your reverse mortgage, and you do not lose the right to sell your home at any time.
Right.